Nothing Today. Warren and Ryan here with you. November 1st. Yes, November 1st is here. We got some NFL to talk about, college football to talk about, a little World Series. I think we're going to do a recap of our college football win totals. Let's see how those are taken a look at right now. So as we're heading into week 10, I think it's a good idea so we can check out how we're doing on that. So we'll do that. And Ryan, I don't know about you, but I've got some Maction picks. I assume you do, so we'll get those out there because Maction is underway tomorrow night, glorious time of year. So we will get into that. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the iHeartRadio podcast section of the app. Ryan, how's it going?
It's going good. Yeah, we'll definitely have some Maction picks for you. Cannot wait. Like you said, great time of year. Good weekend, first weekend of trick-or-treating with the kid. That was fun last night to kind of see him go around and get some candy for me because he can't eat it just yet. So that was fun and exciting. Felt like an actual dad taking my kid door-to-door. Now we're on to November out of nowhere. So here we are.
Out of nowhere. Why did you not dress up?
I don't know. I thought about it like yesterday morning. I was like, yo, Jamie, should we have like dressed up too? And she was like, yeah, I don't know. I was kind of thinking, so just one of those things. I think we were maybe a little too focused on making sure that like he was all set up and ready to go. But I told her next year I have an idea of a costume that I want to do. So we'll see if it comes to fruition.
All right, there you go. It was good weather yesterday.
Beautiful weather yesterday.
Great day.
Yeah, could not have been better. Wasn't too hot. Wasn't too cold. It was just like literally perfect. It was great.
My parents, I don't know if I sent you this, but they got a new, they got an outdoor kitchen and a little patio out there with the covering, mm-hmm. with the roof covering. The only problem is that the patio furniture has not yet, it's being delivered today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the supply chain is all messed up. They ordered it, I don't know, in July or some a while. The whole thing was finished up probably a month and a half ago. So right now we've got the great patio furniture of the soccer chairs out there. You know which ones those? The fold up soccer chairs. And then we have a card table out there right now. There's a TV out there. So I've been going over there on like Sunday to hang out there, and that was perfect. And I was like, man, you know what? It'd be nice if we had this patio furniture today right now, but I guess it's getting delivered today. So that should be fun. And they got an Evo grill. He got an Evo grill, which is pretty much a circular. Did we talk about this or not?
No.
Okay. He's got my dad got an Evo grill, and it's a circular flat top pretty much. So all the people with the Blackstone, kick that to the curb, get the Evo grill. So it's pretty, it's got more, it's not, it's a flat top, but it's got a little texture surface. Does that
kind of like
sense?
Kind of like cast iron.
Yeah. Kind of like that. Yeah. More of a cast iron than the true flat top.
Yeah.
That the Blackstone is, but, I mean, the sliders he made yesterday were pretty good. So, improvements on the grill as you're learning more throughout.
Did some Cleveland mustard on those bad boys?
No, not yesterday. No, we did a little pimento cheese on there.
Okay.
Which is a nice little underrated burger ad. As if you don't want any sauce, but we could have done some Cleveland mustard. It was in the fridge. But no, that was not on there to do that. All right. What do you want to start off with here today? College, NFL, what are you thinking? Unless you have anything at the beginning you want to keep talking about.
No, yeah, I think let's just go ahead and get right in with the Cowboys. I mean, I think that was a great game, great surprise win for them. Every Cowboy fan that I knew or that I know, once they found out Cooper Rush was playing, they're like, hey, look, we lose this game, it's fine. We'll just keep it moving. Everything's fine. I'd rather Dak be there for once and maybe forever. I came across a lot of level-headed Cowboy fans that were like, hey, if Dak's not ready to go, sit him another week, make sure he doesn't screw his leg up even more, strain it even further so that he's, could potentially be out longer. But they were like chalking this up as a loss, like, hey, we're going to lose one, fine. But as long as Dak comes back healthy and stays healthy, that's what's more important. And lo and behold, Cooper Rush pulls out the win.
Yeah, Cooper Rush was pretty good. He was good. Yesterday, very good. But I also think a lot of yesterday, I'm not
was, I think a lot of yesterday is an indictment on the Vikings offense.
Could not agree more.
Like, yes, Cooper Rush played very well, or he played well for a backup. And if Dak has to miss another game later in the season, you feel more than confident that he's able to be the backup quarterback. I don't even know what I was really expecting from Cooper Rush going into the game. He's been in the league for 4 years. So look, he must have done something right to maintain on a roster spot for 4 years in practice and everything. And in preseason, he looked okay, but I mean, he wasn't working with the ones. He wasn't working with Cooper, Lamb, all these guys. But I don't really know what was expecting from them. But yeah, as I said, last night was more of an indictment on the Vikings offense and mainly the passing game. Like Warren Sharp, he tweeted out in the middle of the game. Let me pull this up here. But what time was this at? So you give a time. I think you probably saw this tweet too. It was at 9:43. So that was probably midway through the third quarter, towards the end of the third quarter.
Yeah.
He had thrown 8 of his 23 attempts behind the line of scrimmage. And then when he had thrown beyond 10 yards, Cousins was 4 of 5 for 101 yards and a touchdown. Like, why do you not use those receivers down the field and use them more? Like, I don't get what the offense was doing. Yeah, it was a nice win. The defense played well. They were supposed to do what they do, and they had a nice comeback. But that was, to me, more of an indictment on the Vikings on the offensive end than it was on the Cowboys and what they did.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Kirk Cousins was not sharp yesterday. He was not very good. When you have two guys like Thielen and Jefferson, you know, I know the narrative around Diggs, which he kind of had an off game yesterday because he didn't have an interception, so you kind of got to worry about him. Maybe he's falling off a little bit. But when you got a guy like Thielen and Jefferson, Diggs can only cover one of those guys. Both of those guys are lethal, lethal weapons. And for Justin Jefferson to only get 4 targets all game, catch 2 balls for 21 yards, I don't know if it's like, look, the Cowboys defense is playing much, much better. Didn't seem like they were playing out of their mind where like Justin Jefferson just couldn't get open. It just seemed like Kirk Cousins was like a one look Sally out there. He'd make one look. If it wasn't there, he'd kind of, you know, obviously not take off and run, but kind of rush the next look and force it or just check down right away. So yeah, they weren't really pushing the ball a whole lot downfield. Obviously Thielen has the one nice catch for the touchdown pass, touchdown reception early in the first quarter. But outside of that, their offense was just kind of stagnant. Dalvin Cook never really got it going. But yeah, like I said, I agree. I think a lot of this does kind of fall on Kirk Cousins and maybe even Mike Zimmer.
Yeah, Mike Zimmer. You could also throw Clint Kubiak in there, who's the coordinator. I also think the numbers aren't out yet. I would like to see this, but the defensive line for Dallas was getting a lot of pressure on Cousins, I thought yesterday, or they were doing that, and they were doing a great job of stopping the screen game, which Minnesota likes to run a ton. But I thought the defensive line was very active, getting a lot of pressures. They might have not got a lot of sacks on Cousins, but they were getting a lot of pressures on him so that he couldn't keep looking down the field and things like that. They only had 1 sack yesterday, but didn't it feel like the defensive line was more active?
They're right in
that.
His face. Yeah, they're right. Yeah, in his face,
they were
a
in
lot.
His.
Yeah,
they were in his face a lot. Like there was a lot of sacks is a kind of a misleading stat. I want to go check out how many times he was pressured. I haven't found that yet, but it seemed like they were in his face a lot, a lot yesterday, and so that's at least why that was a good job there. And I know you said earlier in the season, or when you were talking, that I said that if the Cowboys don't win a playoff game, that they're going to fire McCarthy and then promote Kellen Moore as a head coach, because I mean, you have to be convinced now that a team's going to hire him to be a head coach after this year. Like, are you not convinced by that?
No, not totally. Not totally convinced. I know, look, he had a very good game plan yesterday. Obviously, the last 2 years, last year, the first 4 or 5 games, with Dak being in there, the offense was electric. This year, the offense has been great. So, yeah, I mean, but I don't know that he already jumps into head coaching territory in my mind. Now, does that mean a team will hire him as a head coach? Yeah, probably. I mean, when we see guys like, you know, David Culley, or even, I know the Cardinals are 7-1, but Cliff Kingsbury, he didn't even have any NFL experience of coaching and he still got a head coaching job. So there are teams that will think outside the box and go get guys that they're just going to take a shot on. So I just don't think that Kellen Moore is the head coach type quite yet. Now, this take may come back and bite me in the ass, and he might be one of the, you know, a Sean McVay type. But as of right now, like, look, if it was Washington, I wouldn't want Kellen Moore to be my head coach.
Why is that? Just because you don't think he's the type of leader? Because
correct.
Look at Zach Taylor. Now the jury could still be out on him. He got off to a bad start, but he was an offensive mind that was under Sean McVay for 1 year, and the Bengals hired him. They get Joe Burrow. He gets hurt, but now the offense is looking pretty good. They're scoring a ton of points, and before yesterday's game against the Jets, they were the story potentially of the season so far, the overachievers of the season. And I'm not saying that discredits what they did or what that takes away from yesterday, but people are like, oh, he should go, he should go. And then now he could, oh, you know what? He's turning it around. Like, he was an offensive guy that wasn't even calling plays in with the Rams. And it was just, oh, he's the quarterback coach under Sean McVay. We're going to hire him. Like, everybody just wants the new offensive guy. And Kellen Moore's been calling plays for 3 years now. And he puts up last year, when Dak was around, was one of the most explosive, was like the most explosive offense in the NFL. And this year he's doing it with Dak. You're almost surprised when they don't score 30 points as the Cowboys. And then he musters up a pretty good game plan for a backup in his first start in 4 years. I just think that, I mean, teams are going to be lining up. Like, why for the Bears would you not hire him if you have Justin Fields? If you have Justin Fields there, why? If you're, I don't know what other teams are going to be. The Raiders are looking for a head coach. Why would you, if you're the Raiders, not try and go after him if Bisaccia doesn't keep the boys intact there? Why would you not, if you're Jacksonville and you move on from Urban Meyer, wouldn't you want Kellen Moore to work with Trevor Lawrence and see what he could do there? Like, that's the thing I it's just, yeah, you want, if you score enough points, guys are going to buy in.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't disagree with that altogether, you know, at all. But like I said, you asked me if I am still in on Kellen Moore not being a head coach, and I am just not quite yet. I just feel like you said, not quite the leader that is needed for a head coaching job. Because now you're not just running, you know, what could it be, 20, 25 guys. Now you're trying to run the whole 53 and make sure that each division, not even just defense, offense, special teams, but defensive line, linebackers, secondary, you know, offensive line, obviously all the positional groups got to make sure that everyone's on the same page and everyone's buying in, everyone's doing what they need to. You're getting everything out of everybody. And so look, you look at the NFL right now, are there, what would you consider, 10 good head coaches right now?
I guess
32. I mean, less than half, would you agree? Less than half. So say 16 or less are what you would consider good head coaches.
Sure.
And
I think the jury's out on a lot of guys still, I think. I don't know. Like, do you think Matt Rhule's a good coach?
I think he's a good coach. Yes. I guess maybe there could be a little bit of a blurred line of what's a good coach and what's like a, I mean, I'm not going to compare everyone to Bill Belichick or, you know, the all time greats, but just like somebody that you can believe in for the next 5 years, that's going to get your team better. So yeah, I would put Matt Rhule in that group. Yes. I'd put Brian Flores in that group. He's a good head coach. I would not put Dan Campbell in that group. I would not put,
you think
Cole
Brian Flores is a good coach so far with what he's seen this year?
Yeah, look, say what you will. Yeah, I get it. They've had their trials and tribulations. I think a lot of that can be contributed to the quarterback play. And I know, you know, you should be able to overcome some of that adversity. But, hey, sometimes you just can't. So I do think Brian Flores is still a good coach. And
they won 11. I'm not ready to kick Brian Flores to the curb, but they won 11 games last year. Now this year they have one win.
Correct. No,
and,
I know.
And,
I get it.
And
yeah,
I know Tua's been hurt, but they were winning it with, you could say, a worst or Fitzpatrick and like a bunch of smoke and mirrors and stuff. Like, I don't. I'm also worried about, like, Brian Flores. He brings in all those expatriates and then a year after cuts them all, like cuts Van Noy, cuts guys that they signed to big deals. Why would people want to go to Miami if they're going to get 1 year out of them and then cut them after they sign a big deal? I know that's kind of the business, but that also seems like a little bit of a flawed thing, flawed process on your quote unquote program, as they like to say.
No, I mean, look, yeah, everyone has their flaws for sure. But like I said, I would still put him in that good head coach group. And I just don't know that Kellen Moore, just because he's this fantastic offensive mind, you know, to the likes of we haven't seen, or to the likes of, you know, a lot of the guys we have seen that have been very good in the Sean McVay's, the Phillip in Green Bay, LaFleur. Matt LaFleur, you know, you throw Zach Taylor in there for being a quarterback's coach. So just because you're a great offensive mind, like I said, I don't necessarily believe that that automatically vaults you into a good head coach territory.
No, I agree with you on that. So then I guess I should say the answer. So the question should be, how would he get the leadership qualities or whatever? Like, how would you even know that from an offensive coordinator for you to be comfortable as a head coach? Because for me, I think that he's played in the NFL. He was a quarterback. Obviously, he didn't really start that much. He's been around. He's started in college. He's a former player. I think he'd be a fine head coach, and if I was a team looking for a head coach, I'd be ready to hire him up just for his offensive game planning. But how would you say that on the offensive game or the leadership or whatever, how could he prove that to you or something, I guess is the question.
You know, that is a good question, and I'm not quite sure, because it's like one of those things where it's, you know, when you're fresh out of school and you're looking for a job, and you go to a bunch of interviews and say, hey, we're just looking for somebody with a little more experience. It's like, well, I'm trying to get that experience right now.
Yeah.
You know, give me a shot to show you that I can, you know, just give me some experience. So it like I said, it's one of those tough things, but so I don't know necessarily an answer to that. Maybe just another year or two of seasoning, of being an offensive coordinator and just making sure that this is sustainable. Obviously it has been the last couple of years. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the head coaches he's been under in Jason Garrett and Mike McCarthy. It's like, you know, if you come from a good coaching tree, and I think that's why a lot of guys get jobs in the NFL is because of who they were coordinators under. And so maybe not necessarily an indictment on Kellen Moore, but I guess more of who he's been under and who he's quote unquote learned from.
Yeah. Okay. I will say, I think McCarthy, he's got to get a lot of credit for letting Kellen Moore run the show on offense. Like, that's his specialty. Like, that's why you pretty much hired him, right? Mike McCarthy to run the offense.
Yeah.
I think, and you're going to let Kellen Moore, you have input, but call the plays and do all that stuff. Like, that takes a lot. And, like, I mean, we've criticized him for his clock management, and he always seems like it's never good when the owner, when Jerry says, oh, you know what, it's fine, Mike McCarthy made the clock management mistake. Every head coach makes clock management mistakes. Well, you know what, you're hoping you don't have to say that everybody has to make mistakes. That's not an ideal. The defense shouldn't be, well, you know, everyone makes mistakes, so it's okay if our guy makes mistakes. No, that's not good. So I think he's done a solid job, and I always thought he was, you could tell, we talked about this in Hard Knocks, but we always asked, like, as a motivator, could McCarthy motivate the guys? And it seems like, yeah, his Austin Powers thing was kind of weird, but it seemed like guys were buying into the stuff he was saying when he was leading up there in team meetings. Guys were attentive and everything like that. And yeah, some of the times he was trying to rib Dak or be playful with Dak, Dak might have taken it the wrong way, things like that. But it seems like they have a good relationship right now through the middle of the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, maybe he's definitely taken some strides in the right direction of, you know, gaining guys' trust. And like you said, I know the Austin Powers thing was a little corny, but sometimes guys buy in on the corny stuff. It's not always the hard-nosed, the hard-nosed gritty stuff that guys really get behind. Sometimes it is just kind of something stupid, and that's what makes guys buy in, is because it is stupid and they can kind of laugh about it. So, you know, everyone has their way of coaching and running things. Mike McCarthy obviously has his. You know, we heard about the watermelon smashing last year that apparently worked a time or two. You know, so obviously I think Mike McCarthy's doing something right. He's been a head coach for how long now in the NFL? Won a Super Bowl, albeit with one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in a long time. But hey, you still got to get there and you still got to win it. So, you know, you gotta still give him that nod. And I think, look, I will say this to, you know, back to the kind of the Kellen Moore thing. I think, you know, either like an NFC championship or definitely a Super Bowl appearance, maybe that kind of, sweetens things a little bit, for lack of a better term, like, you know, makes things like, okay, this guy, he's coaching big games now. He's been to the big spot. Maybe he can do this, you know, whether win or lose. Maybe in, you know, just for my own personal assessment might help Kellen Moore a little bit more.
All right. All right. But yeah, that was a good win. And good for Cooper Rush. Could have gone a little bit without a lot. They were really playing up the family angle at the end. Not saying that wasn't cool to see, but what do you think about NBC? My friend Brandon was saying he hates watching a game on NBC because they always were late. They're always late getting to the play live. They don't show the snap or whatever. And I was like, whatever. But last night, he didn't text me, but I noticed it a lot that they were right when the play is being snapped is when they get to the camera angle. I thought that was surprising.
Yeah, no, I have noticed that quite a bit as well. That there's always, like you say, you see the ball getting snapped, and then whether it's Al or Chris, they kind of throw in their two cents as the play is already underway. So I have noticed that quite a bit, but it's not enough to be like deter me or be like, I hate watching NBC telecast. But yeah, I have noticed that before
too. Well, he just said he's a big anti NBC production. He likes Al and Chris, just the production side. He's
Tirico guy.
A big Me Too Mike guy.
Yeah.
He hasn't stated his claim on Me Too Mike, but I'll have to ask him about that. elsewhere, the Bucks go down. Brady can't lead another drive, get another game-winning drive as they throw pick six. And Trevor Siemian, it was the return of the backup QB yesterday.
Yep.
With Mike White, Siemian, and Cooper Rush. Trevor Siemian come in for Jameis, who probably tore his ACL. You were just waiting for the Bucks to come back, and you thought they did it. When they took the lead, and then they blew it, and then a bad pick six. Honestly, if you're the Bucks, that was the best thing. When he picked it off, you were hoping he would score, because then you could hopefully get a missed extra point, so have a chance to win. Because if you went down, you wouldn't have got the ball back. So that was probably the best case scenario there. I will say the New York Cincinnati game didn't. I'm surprised the Jets won outright, but I'm not surprised the game was closed, because that is the typical Bengals, typical young team, gets their first taste of success against the division leader, and then they go on a road against a bad team the next week and they get beat. That doesn't surprise me that it was a close game. I'm a little shocked they lost, especially because they had an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter, and you should be able to put the Jets away. But the fact that was a close game, was not surprised about that at all.
Yeah, no, likewise. That's why I stayed away from the Bengals plus 10, or excuse me, Bengals minus 10, whatever it was. I was fully expecting a close game. Definitely keeping within double digits, but I am fully shocked that the Jets won. Mike White was zipping. I mean, because I was watching the red zone, and that game was on a ton on the red zone. And so you're watching Mike White zip the ball around quite a bit. I mean, the offense looked really, really good. First thing that came to my mind was, hey, maybe Washington can get their hands on Zach Wilson and see if we can cook from there. Get the old Zach Wilson, Dax Milton relationship going back again from the BYU days. So, you know, maybe we can work something out there. But, yeah, like I said, I was really, really shocked at how good the offense looked. Robert Saleh, he's a guy that I'd put in the good head coach category. I think he's going to be able to do really, really good things with this Jets team. Just give him another 2 years maybe and get this roster turned over a little bit. But they're heading the right direction. And when you can get a win against a good team like the Bengals, which I still think they are a good team, and do it in convincing fashion, albeit only a 3-point win, they looked very, very good and made a Bengals defense that was, you know, playing really, really well. You know, they still got two sacks, two interceptions, from I think they had three turnovers overall. So to overcome those setbacks as a Jets offense and still get the job done, like I said, says quite a bit about them, and it was a good win.
Yeah, no, the Bengals defense is pretty underrated. For sure. Mike White, I thought Mike White participated. I thought we had two quarterbacks in the all-time great Bahamas Bowl. Cooper Rush was the guy for Central Michigan in that one. Mike White, he was on the team but did not play in that one. Mike White's infamous game at Western Kentucky was when they played Memphis in the Miami Bowl. I don't know if you know this, but then there was a big brawl at the end of that game.
I remember. Yeah, I do remember.
Or
that.
There was a brawl between BYU and someone in it, but I also think there was a big brawl at the Western Kentucky Memphis game. But
I think it was BYU Miami was one of the, like, within recent years, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and then Western Kentucky and Memphis, I believe.
Okay, there was because the Miami Bowl had a couple of brawls there. I remember.
Well, Miami. He won the Boca Raton Bowl, Mike White, with Western Kentucky.
Okay, BYU and Memphis had a big brawl in 2014 at the Miami Bowl. And then I swear I thought there was another one. But maybe that was the one against Memphis. But no, I couldn't remember if he played against Cooper Rush, because that would have been pretty funny if they both would have won on the same day when they played in that Christmas Eve special. No, I think the Bengals they're a team trying to find their footing right now. They all said we came out flat, which is all. Whenever I hear players, maybe I'm being too harsh, but when I hear them say they came out flat, I want to know, like, how can that happen? I understand it's a long season, but you guys prepare each day, many hours for the game on Sunday or Thursday or Monday, whenever it may be. But you come out and you're saying, you know what? We came out flat. How can that happen? Everybody's uber competitive to get in the NFL. And then when I hear you say you come out flat, I'm always curious or a little surprised that that happens, as much as you hear, like, the Bengals players, like, yeah, we came out flat. We don't know. I understand if you don't respect the Jets or respect your opponent, but you should probably always respect your opponent. I just am always curious at how it's just like, you know what? We just came out flat today. I don't like the sounds of that.
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those sports things, I think, that happens. You know, sometimes you mentally you're ready to go, ready to roll, and ready to get out to a roaring start. Then, you know, come kickoff, first pitch, tip off, whatever it may be. And you just don't quite have the energy you thought you did going into it. So, you know, I agree with you. Like you said, everyone's super competitive. Everyone's there because they love the game for the most part. A lot of guys are there for the paycheck. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you just, like you said, maybe not respecting the Jets or how they're coming to play quite enough. So you're like, hey, this should be easy. Let's just roll. We can put it in first or second gear, don't really got to crank it up too much, and we should be able to win this pretty handedly. And then all of a sudden you get smacked in the mouth. You're like, oh shit, maybe we should have came out guns blazing to begin with.
And I guess it's more flat, I would say, in football, because you only have 17 of them now. Like, if you come out flat in an NBA game, you got 82 of them. Yeah, that's fine. And now if you say you come out flat in the playoffs, then I don't get that. Same thing with baseball. There's 162 of them. I don't know how you really come out flat in a baseball game. Maybe you just don't really try a lot at the plate. I don't really know. But, you know, a pitcher should really never come out flat. They might not have their stuff that day, but they shouldn't come out flat because they're only pitching every 5 days. But in football, it's just because the 17 games that gets me. Like basketball, obviously, everyone knows the dog days of that, just because it's a longer season. And in hockey, the same thing as well. But in football, I don't get that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, just one of those weird sports things. I mean, and it also could be one of those throwaway cliche lines.
For sure. Thing. Also that too. Yes. Also mm-hmm. that too. Okay. So this is a question for you. So you have been adamant that Dustin Hopkins is the worst kicker in the league and that you're glad that he's gone.
And somehow he found a guy.
Hold on. Let me finish. You cannot still stand by that statement yesterday after Chris Blewett couldn't get a field goal over his own lineman.
To be fair, when I said that, Chris Blewett was not in the NFL. He was like delivering packages for FedEx or something.
Well, he should have stayed there.
Absolutely. 100% agree. And when this happened, Joey texts me and says, hey, you finally got your wish. Dustin Hopkins is gone. We signed a new kicker. And I said, of course. And the guy we signed him for or signed in his place, his last name is Blewett. The only typical Redskins move. And yeah, this guy is bad. Look, you don't realize how bad it could be until it is. And it's like Jiminy Christmas, at least. Look, I never thought I'd be a Dustin Hopkins protector or apologist or anything in my life. You want to talk about the last thing in my life I would have been? It's this. But at least he could get the kick up and he'd maybe give you a slight chance of is it going to go through the uprights or not. This guy just gets every kick blocked. And I'm just like, what are we doing here? Like, for the love of Pete, it is fascinating and mind-boggling to watch all in the same. There's guys, look, I don't know. Have you seen this guy destroying? He was the guy at UCF that had to quit football because he was making too much money on his YouTube. Have you seen him? He's on Instagram a lot.
Yeah, I heard about him.
This guy hits bombs. I'm like, go sign that guy. He's at least actively kicking. Pat McAfee gives him a boost all the time, which I'm kind of out on Pat McAfee now anyway, but still, this guy hits like 75, 80 yard bombs off the tee. Look, I know it's different than in a game, but he can at least get it up and over. And he played D1 college. I know Chris Blewett did too. So go sign that guy. Go sign literally. It's like, there's no way that this guy was kicking in practice against a live offensive line because he hits everything like it's, I don't know, like a 5-iron, like just straight at it, the goalposts. Like, buddy, you got to get that thing up and over. We need to hit a little flop shot here maybe or something. I don't know. Anything better than what you're doing. It's just, it's ridiculous. I don't know. I don't know what to do. It's fascinating how bad Washington can absolutely screw everything up.
Well, it wasn't even one kick. Didn't he do it twice?
Or like three of his first five kicks were blocked in the NFL.
That's not good.
No.
But this wasn't his debut, though.
Correct. Last week was.
Really? I've heard the name before.
Yeah, because he played. He's played around. Last week was his first NFL game.
Really?
He's probably been in. I think he's played in the preseason a few times.
Okay.
Last week was his NFL debut. First kick of his life blocked.
I thought I've heard him with his name before in the NFL. Like, I thought he's been around for I thought I remember him last year kicking or something.
Mm-mm.
All right. You know, that's tough. That's a tough.
Look.
Well, then that last drive when Denver gets the ball back and they get a fumble on first down albeit Denver recovers. Then Denver gives them a great gift of an incomplete pass. And then they fumble again and they get this one back. That was an all-timer. You've never seen. Okay. If a guy fumbles the first time, you could be like, okay, that was our one chance. But then you get another one. That was unbelievable.
No. Yeah. It's like I said, it's teetering on, and it might already be there of just like, it's like not even, it's past the point of where you're like, you get pissed off and now you just laugh. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when the Joker, I don't know if you saw the Joker with Joaquin Phoenix where, you know, he just went past the part of being pissed off and just started finding, you know, everything funny and then started killing people. Not saying that that's what I'm doing, but it's just like, you just laugh and shake your head like, yep, that's pretty much how it goes. It's pretty much how it goes. So it's look, and I'm still not putting a lot of blame on Taylor Heinicke. Look, he is flawed. Do not get me wrong. Very flawed quarterback. But the offensive play call Scott Turner is putting on is just, it's bad. It is bad. We had a 4th-and-1 yesterday, and he called a play where there was only one wide receiver that was going to be open, and there was like three guys surrounding this one wide receiver because he was the only one that was more than a yard and a half past the line of scrimmage when you needed a full yard. It was a pass play. And so, of course, Heinicke has to try to force it in there, and it looks like a bad pass, but that's the only option you had, and it's incomplete. And so it's like fourth and one, that's what you go with. It's just, it's again, mind-boggling, and I don't put all the blame on Heinicke. The running game hasn't been fantastic, but it's because the offensive line is banged up a little bit right now too, and so it's we're a bad team. We're in a bad way.
All right, then the Titans and Colts had a good one, go down to overtime. Then Derrick Henry's out potentially for the year. I guess I'm surprised he's out for the year. I guess I'm not surprised he wouldn't have got hurt this year. That man's got a lot of wear and tear on that body the last couple of years.
Yeah, tons. Shoot, I mean, everyone throws the all his high school stats out there. Going back to high school, that guy's been pounding the rock.
Yep. All right. What else from anything else from the NFL?
Look, I got to tell you, watching the Browns game, they're a flawed team as well.
They're not bad.
They are a flawed team.
They are a flawed team. I've been saying they're a flawed team.
What is up with Jarvis and Odell? They stink now.
That was Jarvis's worst game as a Brown. That was his worst game as a Brown. Jarvis had a good first three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, the fumble. And I don't know if you were watching that game at all, like throughout, or how much you watch, but
yeah, that's what I mean, just the red zone.
Okay. But like Jarvis, when he would make the catch, he'd run for what, maybe 5 yards after. But then he's also known for, hey, I'm not getting hit, I'm just going to go down, which you know what? When there's three guys around, go down. Don't take the hit, especially when you're a little banged up. And then he tries to fight for the extra yards yesterday and gets stripped. And then he has a drop on fourth down. He has another drop on the final drive, which he probably should have caught. He should have caught both of those passes. The Browns, Odell got three targets yesterday. The last, look, I'm not, if people are going after Odell for that last one, he didn't try and make an effort. You know, the one to post towards the goal line.
Was that the one that was over his head?
If he would have caught it, he would have got absolutely killed. Yeah. Like I'm not going after the guy for that. But
talk to Robbie Anderson,
I'm not. That was not a great pass by Baker, but I'm not going after Odell on that one. But the receivers, no one gets open. Like nobody is wide. There was one play, Higgins, because it was schemed up, was like wide open, and that was for like 10 yards just because that's what the route was. Like nobody gets open. I don't know.
That's how I feel about Washington too. Like nobody's ever open.
Everybody on every other team running free down the middle of the field. Or like the Browns, Joe Woods on defense, just it's a third and eight, and we're gonna play 10 yards off a 10 yards off a receiver. Play some press coverage. Like we've got these physical tall corners, go out there and have them. They make good plays when they're in battles and hand fighting, go out and make a play instead. No, they're doing this, get not covering a tight end, whatever, that happens forever.
I do like Greedy Williams. Greedy Williams is very good. He's aggressive and he'll hand fight anybody. Like even to the point of like, oh man, he might've got away with one there.
Did you see the play that Greg Newsom made on Deontay Johnson at the end of the game? That open field tackle is like for the Browns to get the ball back. That was a great, this is not like me saying this is nothing. I like Greg Newsom and Greedy Williams. This is not anything against them. I just think the scheme that I wanted to play a little more press up on the coverage or play a little closer to the line than just playing 8 yards off the ball. And that comes down to, Joe Woods, who's not doing that. That's not on the players. They're playing well, at least the corners. You could see signs. I mean, this is Greedy's pretty much second year playing because he didn't play at all last year. And Greg Newsom, he's a rookie. But the receivers, they can't get. I still think the leading receiver on the Browns is it might now be Njoku after yesterday. But I think it's like Kareem Hunt. Like until yesterday, it was Kareem Hunt for receiving yards.
Yeah, that's tough.
Oh no, who's Kareem Hunt is tied with Njoku for the most receptions on the team with 20. Odell's got 17, and no receiver's got more than 230 yards. And I know Landry missed
17 catches. That seems high for him.
Well, he's got a 50% catch rate to target rate. He's got 34 targets. I mean, Odell's missed three games. Landry's missed four games. Peoples Jones looked like he was finally coming to his own. Then he hurts his groin. I mean, we just don't have any receivers that can get open right now. That's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. And I can't do the Case Keenum, Baker, whatever stuff. Like, whatever. Baker was far from the issue yesterday. I thought of the whole Browns. I also thought the play calling was suspect. Maybe Stefanski's protecting Baker. I mean, Chubb's out there at 60%. He clearly wasn't himself yesterday, but the offensive line was getting manhandled on the run. And just every time they got to second down, yesterday was way too predictable. It was like, okay, we get a first down on like three passes or two passes. All right, let's go under center and run the ball. They know it's coming. Like yesterday was way too predictable from the offense. And then the defense needs to make a stop in the second. Even if you score 15 points, or you give up 15 points at Brown should win. The Browns should not be scoring 10 points. They're a way better offense than that. The Steelers do have a good defense, but they should be scoring way more than 10 points. And they don't even have to go to a kicker. They don't have a kicker. So they know, you know, you have to get a stop for four plays in a row. You can't give up four plays in a row because they don't have a kicker. But that was a crazy move by Mike Tomlin doing that fake.
That was going to be my bonehead.
I don't understand what he was doing there.
Yeah, that was my bonehead coach of the week of that. I did see something that was pretty funny. That was like, the Browns never forget. And it was the video of Antonio Brown stomping your punter one time. And so
Lanning.
Yeah, that was their chance to get some revenge there. But
I mean, I was stunned they didn't call roughing the passer.
Stunned.
They did not. And then the funniest thing was the next play, T.J. Watt takes a late shot on Baker, and there's no roughing the passer either. It was probably like, okay, it's an eye for an eye on that one. But I was floored they didn't call roughing the passer on that. Just stunned.
Yeah.
But no, look, I'm not down on. I mean, when the Browns finished at -5, I would have said anybody. I should have put out a mass thing and say bet the Steelers today. Like, this line doesn't make any sense. I'm a little down. I'm disappointed in how the season's played out because they've led in 7 of the 8 fourth quarters this year, and their record is 4-4. That's disappointing. They've had trouble closing out games, but it also seems like their offense plays up to better teams and then plays down to like worse offensive teams. Like the Chiefs game, we would all consider the Chiefs in week 1 a very good offense. They play up to that. They look unstoppable. And then the Texans with Tyrod early on, they were going toe to toe with them or whatever. Then the Bears, they just manhandled them. But the Vikings, a poor offensive team, only put up 14 points. Then the Chargers, then they have that amazing 42 points. They can't get it done at the end, but play up to the Chargers offense. The only game they didn't do that, they didn't match the other team's offensive prowess, was the Cardinals. And that's when a ton of guys were hurt. And then the Broncos last week, they play a poor offense, and I know Keenum's in, but they don't really do much there. And then this week against the Steelers, a pretty poor offense, and they don't really do much then. So what, next week against the Bengals, they're going to put up a 35 spot because the Bengals are a good offense? Like, that's the thing I don't get, is why are they, it seems like they're just playing, the offense is playing to the level of the other team's offense, and when that shouldn't be the case.
Absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely shouldn't be the case.
You know, and that's disappointing. But I mean, who knows what with them? They got a big one against Cincinnati. I mean, they go on the road to the Bengals and the Patriots. The Patriots look like they're finding their stride right now, at least defensively. I still don't know about. Maybe I'm being too bullish, but I still don't know about Mac Jones. Like yesterday was not. He was very inaccurate yesterday. So I still don't know what to make about them. But I mean, they got the second hardest. They have one team that they have that they're facing the rest of the season that has a losing record. Mm-hmm. And that's the Lions. Other than that, everybody's got a winning record. The Steelers, Bengals, Raiders, two more against the Ravens. The Patriots are .500. I mean, they got a tough schedule coming in. So we'll have to, this team's got to do some soul searching. But all right, enough about that. Let's get over to some college. Great game this weekend in Michigan State. As Jim Harbaugh blows another one. I saw the back half of the third quarter and the fourth quarter. Don't really know how Michigan blew it. There were some amazing possession turnover changes. That interception at the end of the game was incredible, the one-handed. But another, Mel Tucker, good coach team, finds a way to win, and Harbaugh just left holding the bag again there in a game that how can you lose that, or how did they lose that game?
Yeah, I was out on the baseball field all day on Saturday, so I didn't get to see any of the game. I was obviously following it all on my phone, and I had seen, I forget what the score was, but I mean, Michigan was up double digits at the time.
Early.
And so I was like, oh, okay, so maybe they're going to get this done. And sure enough, Harbaugh pulls a Harbaugh, Michigan's it, and shits the bed in and loses it. Shocking. In a way, what was really shocking to me was Michigan throwing the ball the way they did, and Michigan State was really pounding the rock over and over and over again. Their running back has 5 touchdowns to almost 200 yards rushing. That's, you know, pretty damn impressive. But you don't really see a Michigan-led or a John Harbaugh Michigan team throw the ball. They threw the ball almost 50 times, 48 times total, which I felt like was a ton. Both of us said that the play here was the under. That wasn't the case, but
not at all.
But it was a good game, and you know, another blemish on this Harbaugh regime of playing with Michigan, of not being able to get it done when it really matters.
Well, I think I said on Thursday that Michigan State's pass defense was one of the worst in the country. So they obviously thought that they could make way through the air, and they did. I mean, Michigan was up 30-14 with 6 minutes and 47 seconds to go in the third quarter. So you got to think that you're going to be able to
close the door on that.
Yeah, close the door on that one. You're up 16, and then next thing you know, you get the ball back. You punt on 7 plays, and then Michigan State goes with 2 touchdowns, and it's a tie game, and you're like, holy cow. I don't know what to make of. I don't even know what to make of Michigan State. Like, I don't think Michigan State's good, but I don't know if they're like that good. I don't. Their running back is incredible. Walker, he's getting some Heisman buzz right now after his performance. But I mean, you look at them, they just grind out wins. Like they grinded out a win against Nebraska, as I said. Indiana, they win by 5, then grinding out this Michigan. Like, I don't know what to make of them. They go, I think this is at Purdue. Purdue just loves an upset. At Purdue this weekend could be in trouble, and they still have to go to Ohio State on the 20th. I don't really know what to make to Michigan State. And then the big thing is the first college football rankings get released tomorrow. And a lot of people are going to have to are wondering, after Georgia, who is going to be the number 2 team in the country, or how the rankings are going to look. And that is going to be I would say that is going to be an interesting spot of, is Cincinnati number 2, or what team is, what the rankings are going to look like tomorrow when we get into the greatest part of college football season, when everybody can argue about the rankings.
Look, I think if it's done correctly, I think Michigan State is in the top 4. Look, based on if I went based off of just eyeball test, my top 4 would be Georgia, Bama, Cincinnati, Michigan State. Not necessarily in that order, but some comment. Obviously, Georgia number 1, but Michigan State, Alabama, and Cincinnati should be the other 3 in that top 4. Just based on the eye test. Now, I'm sure Oklahoma will probably be in there because they're undefeated as well. But I mean, they just haven't played really good football.
Well, they have since Caleb Williams has been in there. They have as of late, as of late. Half.
True, but just as a whole, you can't say, oh, well, they're playing good now. It's just, you know, if you take a, you're going based off the season up to this point. That's why you wait this long to release the rankings. And up to this point there, I don't think they've been one of the top 4 teams in the nation.
For sure, but don't you also have to say, hey, you know what, Oklahoma, we take a look from where they're a different team. You could still look at where they were at the beginning of the season and how they played, but now this is a new team. They got a new quarterback. They're not going to Spencer Rattler. Like, look at how they're playing. I'm not saying they should be in the top 4, but this is a different team than what it was in week 1. Ohio State's a different team than what they were when they lost to Oregon. I'm not saying they should be ranked above Oregon, but they're a different team now than they were back then. That's just a fact. And the same thing with Oklahoma.
We could probably argue in circles, you know, round and round about yes, the top 4, no doubt. Not saying that I disagree with you, but again, you know, we can make points and arguments for both sides.
I was looking at this yesterday morning while I was waiting for the NFL to start up. If Wake Forest goes undefeated and wins the ACC, do they get in?
I don't. It depends. Are they going to get it? What happens if Georgia, Cincinnati, Georgia, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, and Michigan State are, and Wake Forest are all undefeated. Who's getting in?
Look, I think, I know it would suck, but I mean, Cincinnati does have a couple really good wins against Notre Dame. And I guess that's really their best win so far is just the Notre Dame game. But then you look at Wake and they
beat nobody.
Nobody. So that's the thing. But then, you know, they're Power Five. They get that kind of notch in their win column for them. So yeah, that's why I wanted to bring up the question of if they happen to go, do you put the Power Five over the Group of Five? Because I think we agree Cincinnati's probably the better team. And I think if either of those teams get in the playoff, I think they get blown out in the first round. For sure. So this is why the playoff needs to be six teams. You cap it at six, first and second, one and two get a bye and have the next four play it out. And then that way you can leave it out all the extra BS of should this team get in, should they not?
I think they should have a floating year to year. How many teams get in? Like you have the four, or you could play off for the three and four. Like if Cincinnati and Wake go undefeated, they play off to get into the playoff. Like it's the play-in game, and it's people decide each year towards the end of the season if we need it this year. Because let's be honest. There's not really four great teams. There's really only one great team in college football, I think, and that's Georgia. And everybody Alabama. Else, and then everybody else is a step below. And then you could depend on your tiers after that, but there's really only one great team out there, and that is Georgia. So I think we need a floating play-in game on a year-to-year basis. Who should get in? That would be electric stuff.
That would be electric.
You find out but you have to declare, you have to declare the play-in for the playoff before championship weekend. So imagine they just say, yep, this year we're having a play-in. That would be electric. Pins and needles.
I don't hate that idea. I don't hate it.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And obviously it would never happen, but that would be an amazing. And part of it is a fan vote. So you could get your little board in there and you get a fan vote. You get some fans in there to vote.
I think every year everyone would just say, yes, give me a play-in.
Well, I think so. I think so too. But that's why the fan, it's like 25% of the vote.
Okay.
That my picks this week were terrible. I got screwed on that Clemson game, and I knew when that guy batted the ball down at the last play that when we were getting the laterals that was going to be a loss. I had the under in that game should have gone under first. That was a double spread game, the over and game. My picks right, and then Oregon couldn't hold the back door closed against Colorado. I went 2-5, I think, this week. I don't know. I was pretty good on my Utah State time zone play. That was pretty easy. All right. Do you have your season win totals up?
No, I do
or
not.
Can you go look at them or not?
No, I don't know where I put them. Okay. No, it's not. I'd have to go back and listen to the show.
All right. We'll do that on Thursday then.
Okay.
But I am taking a look at mine. I'm looking pretty good. Looking pretty good. So we'll do that on Thursday. All right. What Maxion is back. Cooper Rush started Maxion week off right. Yeah. If you started last Thursday, there would be a football game on TV every night until the Tuesday of Thanksgiving, which is perfect because then that's when the college basketball tournaments get underway. So what do you got in the Mac? Weather looks frigid up in northern Ohio and Michigan for this weekend. I have three Maxion plays here.
I have four. Yeah, I have one in every game tomorrow. Do I just go ahead and give them?
Yeah, I have one tonight and two tomorrow. Holy line move. What is going on here?
What do you got?
Kent. There was five, and now it's down to 3.5.
Yeah, I saw that 3.5. That's why I paused for a second. Like, shit, do I have a play in every Mac game so far?
There's five. There's five. Not there's five. So you don't have one. What is going on?
Correct. That was the one that I didn't have a play in.
Okay.
Was that Kent State game? I'm gonna take the under in the Akron Ball State game. I got Miami of Ohio laying the 7.5 on the road against Ohio. I like Eastern Michigan plus 8.5, and I like Central Michigan plus 10. And think about taking that Kent game. I don't know. I'll lay off.
Where are these numbers coming from? There's no way this is. I gotta go look somewhere else up to Action. The Action Network app is giving me some bad. Because there's no way an over just jumped up 4 points in the last hour.
Maybe they were expecting some weather and the weather ain't coming.
God, yeah, what? Holy cow, this is right. What is going on?
Yeah, I've seen 3.5 and 66.5 is the total.
Yeah, no, I'm not. The total, I wasn't worried about that total. I was talking about the total in Western Central Michigan. I had that at 63, and now that's up to 67.5. That was a play at 63, at 67. That's a take it off the card there. What is going on?
I'm seeing 65.5 and 66.5 on that total. So
for Central?
Correct.
Okay, still, I don't, I'm not going to bite at that at 67. 67.5. All right. I am, now I only have two picks. As you know, one of them, Kent State minus 3.5. The defense is bad. Northern Illinois, solid, a solid bunch. Pretty good. They're 5-2 against the spread. I've been on them a bunch. I like Kent at home. The offense should be, should get rolling there. The Northern Illinois defense, the rush defense, is pretty putrid. They're 120th in rushing yards allowed this season. Kent has the 30th best rush offense in the in college football, so they should do that and take advantage of that. And then Dustin Crum through the air. Like him. Kent's got this receiver named Cephas, I think. He is pretty, pretty good. And then I hate doing this, but I got an under like you do. But the under I have is in Toledo, Eastern Michigan, on the season right now. Unders for Toledo are 6-2 at home. The unders are 3-1, and in Toledo's last five games, the totals have gone under, and those are against opponents of Ball State, UMass, Northern Illinois, Central Michigan, and Western Michigan. So all conference games or relatively comparable opponents to the MAC. So I like the under in that one. And so those are my two picks. I feel like I don't, I need another pick out there, but that's all I got. As you heard, I like the Central Michigan, Western Michigan over, but that's up 67 now. Don't really like that. Yeah. So that's it from Action for me.
Take the under then.
I'm not taking the under. I've already took one. I feel like I'm committing a crime taking it under in a MAC game. But
look, the only reason I took that Ball State Akron total under is because I just don't think Akron's going to be able to score.
No, I agree. I agree with you on that. They haven't really been able to score other than the Bowling Green game. They haven't scored more than 21. So I can get with you on that. But I felt bad taking an under. So that's those are Maction picks. All right. World Series. We're trucking along. Game six. Even after the Grand Slam, I wasn't surprised the Astros came back to win.
Not at all.
Because they were down. I forgot they were down 3-0 last year in the ALCS and took that to game seven. But they're just a gritty bunch, you could say, a fighting bunch. Finally, Dusty Baker, you could say, made a good lineup change by taking Bregman out of the three hole. That guy couldn't hit a beach ball forever, and then move Correa up, who was hot, and change the lineup around, get some offense going. And it's also hard to go back-to-back bullpen games for the Braves when those guys are in high-leverage situations, because the game on Friday, even three games in a row of high-leverage spots, Friday night they won 2-0, then... What did they win Saturday night?
Yes.
You know what? What was the score? It was close game, wasn't it?
No, Saturday was a blowout. I think Sunday was a 2-0 game. Or no, Saturday. Yeah, yeah. Wait, no, yesterday was
Friday was 2-0.
Friday was 2-0. Yeah. Saturday,
let me pull it up. 3-2. Yeah. Because they got the two they got the two home runs late in the eighth inning. Correct, so your guys are again in a high leverage spot 2 days in a row. Then you go to the bullpen game the second day in a row, and the guys are pitching on 3 days. Like those, that's a lot of stressful pitches, a lot of energy wasted. Guys were going to be gassed out there.
Yeah.
But do you think the Astros are going to win, or who's going to win the World Series?
I think the Braves are going to win. Luis Garcia going game six on 3 days rest, I think is a wild move. The guy has pitched well on occasion. His last outing was Friday, obviously, because he's pitched on 3 days. Didn't go as well. You know, he kind of got hit around. He got hit around, but he didn't give up runs. So I guess, you know, you can chalk it up to just, you know, getting out of tough spots. But I think putting him out on 3 days rest is not going to bode well for the Astros. And I actually think the Braves are going to close it out in game six.
Even behind Max Fried?
Correct. Yeah, who's pitched the complete opposite of well. So
yes, I think it's going seven.
Yeah.
I think the Braves will win a game seven. I don't know what are the Astros going to throw out? Greinke in game seven?
Probably.
I'm disappointed he's not going to get another pinch hit chance. I enjoyed that. That was fun.
That was, I know. And it was like that. He was swinging a tennis racket up there. That was such an ugly swing. And he freaking ropes a line drive to right field. Even Freddie Freeman had to give him some props. But yeah.
Well, he got to hit the night before when he was pitching.
Correct. No doubt. No doubt. But the pitch that he hit last night when he was pinch hitting was all the way down the front foot. The bat was like dragging behind him like it was a sledgehammer, and he just slapped that thing right to right center. And hey, wasn't pretty, but it got the job done.
Yeah, I do think the National League rules are dumb. Or I would like to see, they're going to get the universal DH, which I like. Mm-hmm. But it does take out the decent hitting pitcher to pinch hit in a playoff game or a spot. I like that. That's a nice little baseball touch. But also down to it, I know it's a whole strategy, but it is kind of dumb that we're like, okay, we don't want to burn our position players. We got to have a pitcher pinch hit here.
Yeah.
In the whole grand scheme of things. And then how about I was texting my buddies from Houston. If Martin Maldonado gets a hit, it's not your night. You just pack up and leave the stadium. If he does something well offensively, pack it up, move on. All right, it's not our night. You just can't overcome a Martin Maldonado hit.
Correct. Yeah, and you know everyone's been talking about, you know, why is he in there? But he gives them a big defensive upgrade behind the dish, and we saw clinching game against the Red Sox. He had a big clutch hit, and then he came up and threw a dude out at seconds in the blink of an eye. So he was able to do it, you know, in a tough spot then. But yeah, he's just not seeing the ball, not swinging the bat well at all.
All right, you have anything else?
I think that'll do it for me.
All right, I will say this. I know you're I don't know, not really paying attention or whatever, but the Premier League right now?
Juicy.
It is. There's a lot. It's great. It is great. Tottenham's manager got sacked today, in which I love that they called their game against Manchester United on Saturday El Sackico, which was great. Whichever manager lost was going to get the sack, and that is true. We have a blockbuster NFL trade right now. A blockbuster. Von Miller is getting traded.
What?
Yes. Do you have a guess what team he's getting traded to?
Who needs a linebacker? New England?
He is getting traded to the Los Angeles Rams.
Wow.
Yes, for two second-day draft picks.
They just do not like draft picks over in L.A.
Well, look, they're going all in. And you know what? I love this tweet from Adam Schefter. Miller is now saying his goodbyes to his friends in the Broncos training facility.
Like, he always adds in that extra thing.
He always adds. Like, did you see the Ian Rappaport tweet about J.J. Watt when he was out?
Yes.
Look how hard it was for him to miss. He had like four things torn in his shoulder. Correct. And my favorite replies were, did JJ tell you to tweet this?
Yeah, just like when JJ Watt signed his contract. They were like, And after the agreement, JJ said, okay, I got to get back to work, and promptly went to the weight room. It's like, why are you adding these? Like, who cares?
I know, but just stop carrying the water for this guy. No, this is a legit Adam Schefter account. Yeah, this is not a fake account.
Yeah, no.
Hey, you're going for it though. But no, the Premier League is juicy, juicy, juicy stuff. Like Liverpool had a bad tie against Brighton. Man City lost to Palace. Arsenal's on the comeback. I think they've got, 10 games in? So that's 7 on the trot, as they say, unbeaten in the league, and 10 overall unbeaten. Just a lot of juicy stuff right now in the Premier League. It's some good. West Ham's rolling along. Still probably think Chelsea wins the league pretty easily, but there's a lot of stuff that is pretty pretty enticing right now.
I've been keeping an eye on it. Sorry, I was just looking at the Rams, because the Rams run a 3-4 defense, I believe.
Yeah, but Von Miller's always been like an outside linebacker. He's dropping in coverage and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Aaron Donald. And look, I know Von Miller isn't Von Miller of years past, but still, he can still get after it.
He's hurt right now, though.
He is?
He hurt his ankle against the Browns, and I think did he not play yesterday against Washington? Or did he play?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he played.
Okay, because he left the game with like an ankle and re-aggravated his ankle injury. So I guess he must have played yesterday, but he was hurt in the second half of the Browns game. Mm. Yeah, no, and you got the Michael Brockers up there too. That's a solid. Yeah. How the Ram, it's there. It's the NFC is very top. It's a lot of good teams at the top.
Yeah.
But this definitely, they're definitely planting their claim out there of how good they are, or at least. You know what the Rams are? You know, we always like it when your team goes out and gets a name.
Yeah.
Like a name. I'm not saying Von Miller is this, but the Rams are key on getting the name. Like, I think we would both you would have liked Matt Stafford. We're not saying that, but like Leonard Floyd is a guy that is a good name, high first round pick. Like, they're always up on the, we're going to get it. Like DeShaun Jackson. What is he?
Sonny Michel.
That's a name. That's a name. Yeah. Brandon Cooks, when they would trade for Brandon Cooks, we got a name. He was good then. But like, they are big on, we want names. We're a name. This was before they even were in. Well, no, they weren't. But like, they're a bit. We want names on that team, and they're getting them. Damn, if they want them out there, they're getting them.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that will do it for us here. We'll be back on Thursday. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Enjoy the action, and we'll talk to you then.